Welcome to Dear Watchers, a Marvel What If podcast where we do a deep dive into the long-running Marvel comic book series, What If?
Where you are traveling through the storylines before and after that inspired or took inspiration from this week's issue. And you meet your Uatus on this journey, Guido and Rob.
Yes, it's me, Rob, or as I'm also known, Robbie Blaze.
And you might have noticed I used the Ghost Rider narration there.
Yes.
You, dear watchers, are listening to our special series. It's October, so we're continuing our Villains Month, and we are starting a three-part special episode where we visit one What If that is three Earths in one issue over the course of our next three episodes.
And with that, dear watchers, let's get our motors running and heading out on the highway and check out what's happening in the multiverse with today's episode. And today we are going to be discussing what if Ghost Rider had remained a villain.
And this is Earth 7910, the first of three similarly numbered Earths that we will meet in this special series. And on this Earth, we find that Johnny Blaze sells his soul to the devil to save Crash, just as he does in the 616. However, Crash survives. And then Johnny, as Ghost Rider, accidentally kills Crash with his powers, flees, encounters the son of Satan, who is now an enemy to him. They get into conflict, but Johnny Blaze is not able to be saved, and the son of Satan must kill Ghost Rider. And that's a very brief summary of a somewhat brief issue.
Yes. So what is your background, Guido, with Ghost Rider, or the Ghost Rider, as he's sometimes known in these early issues?
And this is Ghost Rider 2, obviously, not the Western Ghost Rider that Marvel created years prior by the same writer and creator.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. It is so minimal, I have to say. I mean, I had some tangential, like, on the periphery, being a teenager in the 90s, familiarity with Danny Ketch as Ghost Rider, but I never read it, other than the two X-Men crossover issues, of course. Brood Trouble in the Big Easy. Beyond that, I, you know, saw the Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider movie. Mm-hmm. I watched S.H.I.E.L.D. when Robbie Reyes debuted as Ghost Rider. And I've read some of the more recent titles on and off because they're often by writers that I like, but I don't get them. There's so many Ghost Riders and so many demons possessing the different Ghost Riders. And very, very little. This was my most exposure for sure.
Yeah, this was my most exposure as well. I was always loved the image of the character. And on our previous episode, we talked about Deadpool and Venom. And I think it's the same thing for a teenage boy. It's flaming skull, riding a motorcycle. Definitely was always into that character. And I was also into, at the time, I guess Danny Ketch was also my Ghost Rider. Johnny Blaze was in his human form. You also had those other characters around the same time. I remember there was that guy, Terror Inc., and he had like an indestructible hand and like a grotesque face. They had that whole kind of like dark line along with Blade happening at that time. So I was always fascinated by the characters, and I would always pick him up whenever I saw him in another issue, if he was in another title, like you were talking about with X-Men. But I never read his standalone title. And then, of course, like you, I also watched the Nicolas Cage movie with Peter Fonda as Mephistopheles, which I guess is Mephisto, but he looks just like Peter Fonda. And then I also saw him on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. program. And that's about it.
So let's launch right into our Origins issues.
Why, right now, on this very show, you're going to get the answer to all your questions. Our amazing story begins a few years ago.
And today, we will be jumping into the fires of hell with Marvel Spotlight number 5 from May 1972, titled simply Ghost Rider.
And this is written by Gary Friedrich, penciled, inked, and colored by Mike Plube, lettered by John Costa, edited by Stan Lee and Roy Thomas. And we read it as the first Ghost Rider. And a little bit of context, as I mentioned, Gary Friedrich and Mike Plube are both Bronze Age legends at Marvel. Gary had created the original Ghost Rider Westerner version, and Plug had done a lot of Man-Thing and horror titles at Marvel. So this was quite a team debuting this character. What do you think?
Well, and I think what was striking to me is so many people, even if they've never read the comics or never even seen the movies, know the origin stories of superheroes. Like, everyone knows Bruce Banner gets hit by gamma radiation and Peter Parker gets bitten by the spider, even if you've never read those or seen those. Here, I definitely went in and realized when I was reading this, I know he must sell his soul to the devil, but I do not know the context in which that happens. I don't know really why he does it. And I didn't even know necessarily that he was a motorcycle rider before he sells his soul. So much of reading this was new to me.
Yeah, I was familiar with his origin just because knowing it over the years, being a huge Marvel fan, I didn't know that there was a girlfriend, sister, semi-incest yes. plot in yes. this, as was common in a lot of comics. I also didn't realize how much I would like the issue, actually. The narration of the you, they're addressing like Ghost Rider and Johnny Blaze in the narration. So it feels like something pulpy or horror-esque. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but
yes,
that I like that element. It doesn't carry forward for very long. But
the writing very much reminded me of the EC comics and also things like the Strange Love or Modern Love comics as well, all those kind of adult moral tales that were coming out in the 50s. Definitely was very much reminded of that, where the narration is quite good, but then when it gets into the nitty gritty of the actual dialogue and the plot, it's very stilted. It definitely does not feel like this was written in the 70s. It feels like it was written 20 years earlier than that, in terms of just the dialogue and the suddenness of. So for anyone who hasn't read it, his adopted father, who's also a motorcycle rider, is dying. He's got the disease. He's got the sickness, I think it says here later on in our what if, it does say cancer, but he's going to die. And then Johnny gives his soul to the devil, or makes a deal with the devil in order to save his stepfather. But it just becomes very sudden. You know, in the narration, we hear Johnny has known about this in the past, had read these occult books. Later on, we know.
Well, not even just occult books, books about Satan, right?
Books like about Satan.
Because yes. Then it comes up that his half sister, foster sister, et cetera, she then also read the books about yes. Satan, which is how she's able to stop him at the end.
Yes. It just comes out of it. Now, if they had been in like a circus atmosphere, I could have seen like the setup being, oh, there was a fortune teller at the circus who passed on these books to them, and that's how they read it. But we never get any of that. And that's what I'm saying in terms of the 50s, very outdatedness. It just becomes very sudden. It's very much kind of placed on top of the story.
Well, I don't know anything about the Hells Angels. I'm sure you do. Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming they predate this, being 1972. They've certainly existed. So I'm just curious yes. what, I'm sure there's an element of whether it's influence or whether it's market potential, and they're trying to capitalize on this idea of like motorcycles and Satan and like the mm-hmm. way these two things intersect.
Yes, I do think that there was a lot going on in the zeitgeist at the time. So, you know, in our intro, I was jokingly quoting the Steppenwolf song, you know, Born to be Wild, which is famously used in Easy Rider.
Catch that.
Oh, well, that is in, you know, it's like the iconic song from Easy Rider, the famous motorcycle movie that came out in 69. You had the Hell's Angels coming, you know, in Altamont in 70, 69, 70 as well. And then you had those Roger Corman movies, funny enough, starring Peter Fonda, which is probably why he's in the Nicolas Cage movie, which are all those famous biker movies that came out in the late 60s, early 70s. And we always know comics are just a few years behind. They're always a little bit behind the eight ball. So I think this stuff had been already happening in the culture. And now Marvel is like, okay, now we're going to make our Roger Corman occult biker movie, because this stuff had already been in the youth culture at the moment.
They're also leaning into horror at this point, man. This is sort of the recovering post the 50s censorship that where we have Man-Thing. These creators, Friedrich and Ploug, will actually go do the Frankenstein series, which is pretty acclaimed for Marvel. So they're trying to move into horror, which also relates to why Damien Hellstrom, Son of Satan, is debuted in this in just a moment. But anything else about this debut issue that you were thinking?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about Gary Friedrich's work, which is both good and sometimes not so good. But I was really blown away by the art here throughout. The faces are great. There's some few crowd sequences that are very striking. And then also Mike Ploug also did the coloring, which taps into that classic interdimensional colors that we see in Ditko's Doctor Strange. We also see in the Steranko Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that those really vivid colors, but also just those colors mixed with the art, the skull, all of that, even the faces of the regular humans, like the stepfather and Rocky, his girlfriend's last sister, are all just really well done.
Yeah, well, Ploug got his start in Warren Publications.
Oh, well, that's it makes so perfect sense.
That's why the horror stuff. And then he did this and the Frankenstein and some Man Thing, Werewolf by Night. And then he did Marvel's licenses for Planet of the Apes and Call the Destroyer. So he really is the horror guy. So I think the coloring and the drawing that you are drawn to is probably for that reason. And I totally agree. I really like it. There's times where it doesn't have a lot of detail, but I actually think some of that, we read this digitally. I think some of it is that digital coloring that happens when they converted these pages. I'm sure it has a lot more warmth and richness on the page when it's not this flooded digital coloring.
Yeah. Well, let's continue the story of Johnny Blaze into his solo title. And this is Ghost Rider number one, from September 1973, and the title is A Woman Possessed.
So this is written again by Gary Friedrich, but drawn by Tom Sutton, who penciled it, inked by Sid Shores, colored by George Russo's, lettered by John Constanza, and edited by Roy Thomas. We read this not just because it's the first ongoing of Ghost Rider and it's only a year later, but because it is the first Damon Hellstrom, who becomes a important player in the What If.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Damon Hellstrom is the son of Satan. And here, of course, in the first issue we discussed, Johnny Blaze does give his soul to Satan. At what point, though, did Marvel kind of shift away from actual Satan and into Mephisto and made up characters? Because it does feel a little almost weird for Marvel to actually have Satan and the devil actually exist in this world where we have mostly interdimensional characters, like Thor is not really a god, he's an alien.
It is strange, and I'm really curious about the cultural context for these issues, because when I was looking at this, some of the very little research I was doing showed that Friedrich had said, or maybe even Roy Thomas had said, that Stan wanted a character called Son of Satan, and they then just sort of ran with it to create Damon Hellstrom, and then Son of Satan. So this story is in the first two issues of Ghost Rider. They then go back to Marvel premiere or Marvel Spotlight to debut Son of Satan, formally tell his origin, that's the vehicle to introduce him. So I don't know why there was a push to have Son of Satan here and have this explicit Satan stuff, even though they would later obviously treat hell as a demon dimension and not the Christian hell, and then they would also retcon it so that it's not the person that he made the deal with, obviously, is not Satan, certainly not a Christian Satan. So I don't know when it became that it was Mephisto instead of Satan. Obviously, again, there's an attempt to not have it be a Christian god. And I don't know when they later retconned it and named him as Mephisto. Mephisto at this point had debuted in a few years earlier in Silver Surfer. So Mephisto exists in the universe, but there must have been a push for Satan here. And I have no idea why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just looking up to, you know, in 1969, you had Satan Sadists, which was a biker movie as well. So they're definitely maybe just thought, okay, let's use Satan. Let's use the devil. Let's put it like out there.
And if that and was a genre of exploitation movie, then maybe in the same way that Luke Cage and Iron Fist or Shang-Chi came to us from the same realm, perhaps there were these biker Satan movies and that was inspiring this. And that's why they explicitly named Satan. I'm not sure, but it's a odd issue. Again, it's well drawn and has the look of Bronze Age horror, but it is so melodramatic. I mean, yes. My favorite moment is when this possessed person goes to the hospital and says, "A good thing I remembered to disguise my voice. The raspy tones of Satan coming from a girl might have proved disastrous." Like, just there's a lot of silliness, over the top silliness, but
yeah,
it's consistent in terms of Ghost Rider. And then I did go, we did not include in our reading list Ghost Rider 2 and Marvel Spotlight 12, but I did read them just so I understood Damon Hellstrom's appearance more. Doesn't amount to, frankly, much more.
Well, he's set up though in this, the way they introduce him, which when you first see him and he's in like a big winged back chair and you only see his hand and he's, you know, there's like a fireplace. And then later he shows up. It's right out of The Exorcist, which is the other big giant cultural thing also happening at this time as well. So I just loved how he was set up and introduced and you don't really even see his face. And definitely it was very similar to how they introduced Father Marin in The Exorcist. And of course the iconic shot of him under the street light and everything like that. And him showing up. That's
true. And the trench coat, he's holding the cross at the beginning. So yeah, that was likely an influence.
Only in The Exorcist, you don't have Father Marin sitting in his chair wishing, "I wish someone had answered my classified ad. It's been like 3 weeks since someone has answered my ad." So, which is,
I know. And way. I love that he's taken this ad out nationally. And that's how the person knows to call him.
Yeah. Yes. And yeah, just to, before we wrap up here, you mentioned, you know, the art getting also great Bronze Age horror art, and Tom Sutton did work on, also worked for Warren, and he worked on Creepy and Eerie magazines as well. So while I don't think the art is as good as the
Mike Klug is a legend. Yeah.
There are a few shots here, especially actually of like the older indigenous man, like that just brings right to mind, you know, some of those Warren comics, and also the Ghost Rider skull.
The skull has a lot of detail in the lines. Yeah, I agree.
Wonderful. Well, let us sell our souls to discuss this week's What If.
I am your guide through these vast new realities. Follow me and ponder the question, what if?
And this week we are going to be discussing What If Volume 1, Issue Number 17, and will be the first of three parts in this issue. And this story is called What If Ghost Rider Had Remained a Villain, from October 1979.
So this was written by Stephen Grant, penciled by Carmen Infantino, inked by Mike Esposito, colored by Carl Gafford, lettered by Thomas Orzechowski, and edited by Mark Gruenwald. The question on the cover is actually, what if Ghost Rider, Spider-Woman, Captain Marvel were villains? Then inside each one becomes had remained a villain, since these are characters who had some villainous origin. And while there is a opening splash page of Uatu presenting what if these three characters had remained villains and what if these other paths had been taken, each story is completely independent with no other framing device at all. They're three mm-hmm. separate stories with a start and a finish. And again, it's Earth 7910. And in some of the interviews that Stephen Grant gave to Back Issue, he recalled that Gruenwald was going to be writing Spider-Woman and wanted to use her, but she was not popular enough. And so Mark came up with this umbrella concept, and Stephen Grant said he never really cared about Ghost Rider one way or the other, but since he had a regular book and he fit the requirements of sort of being introduced as a villain, then they included him in here. And you definitely get that feeling as you read it, yes, that he does not care about this character's origin one bit.
Also, and I you know, not just Stephen Grant, but I know Carmine Infantino is also a legend, especially I think for a lot of the stuff he did for DC, right? But here, some of the art is just, I mean, I don't know if he, it felt like he was doing it on the bus on the way to school. Some of it might have been just not detailed at all, especially Ghost Rider looks awful in a few of the panels.
It might have been rushed, and I should correct that actually the Ghost Rider section has a different inker from the rest of the issue. It's Frank Springer, and the colors are Roger Slipher. So perhaps something did happen where it was rushed, but for sure, there is not a lot of detail in here. The shape of everyone's body is completely deformed and makes no sense. So I agree, this almost feels like it was a draft, and perhaps it was. I'm not sure. Carmine Infantino really did not do much for Marvel. I actually don't know of much Marvel that he did. So I have no idea what the deal is with this story happening. And, you know, he did occasional issues here and there around 78 to 80, but I have no idea why this one.
See, did not quite earn his paycheck then on this one. And yeah, I think usually, you know, it actually threw me for a loop when I started reading it, because even on some of the other shorter what ifs we've done where they've shared an issue, there's been a little bit more setup. But as you said in your intro, basically Uatu just has his very quick opening narration. We cut to Ghost Rider and Damon Hellion fighting. And
Damon Hellstrom.
David Hellstrom fighting. And then we kind of get the rest of the story, what leads up to that, in flashbacks throughout that fight. But it felt like we were really being thrown into the deep end of the pool very suddenly. And usually the what ifs kind of gradually lead you in into that story.
It is oddly constructed. It's why I can mm-hmm. understand Stephen Grant saying he didn't care very much, because it does start you with him in confrontation from Damon Hellstrom, which doesn't happen in the comics. Yes. Like Hellstrom arrives as an ally. So you're reading it, even though I'm no Ghost Rider expert, but having just read that, you're reading it and you're like, why is Damon Hellstrom now confronting him and going after him? Then you get his origin and the deal he made and the fact that Crash lives. And still though, like, it's not clear then what's going on until you get the fact that he accidentally kills Crash, which is a common trope that is going to show up in next week's episode also, that he accidentally kills him. And then just sort of, they lean into the, he's evil, right? Like there's no explanation for why Johnny Blaze suddenly can't control the demon inside, or why he suddenly has no moral compass. He sheds one tear when Roxanne dies, and that's how Hellstrom is like, see, Johnny's still in there. But then ultimately there's not enough Johnny in there or whatever, that Hellstrom has to kill him. So there's no exploration of Ghost Rider or Johnny as much yes. of a character, or why he would become so evil, even if he did accidentally kill Crash after making this deal with the devil, which I guess is a big deal, but
Yeah, and I think, and then basically this story ends with a Seydoun Ex Machina where Damon Hellstrom is basically able to remove the hellfire from Ghost Rider, and then he's just left the skeleton, but we don't really know, does he really save Johnny's soul in that as well? Does Johnny just perish? There's so much talk just a few panels earlier about the fact that Johnny's still in there, but we don't really know then what happens to the essence of Johnny at the end of this.
I assume he's dead. By saving him, he's released him from this curse. I guess so, being,
but yeah,
I think for sure we're supposed to believe he's dead, and that could be within Hellstrom's powers, but again, since Hellstrom arrives as an ally in the Ghost Rider title, it's not clear to me in those first few issues, at least, why that he can do that. So yeah, it's nothing I would ever recommend to anyone.
No.
What is interesting, I will say, is it almost feels like if Ghost Rider's debut in that issue of Marvel Spotlight number 5 had just ended this way, it would have been one of those sort of EC-esque horror anthology titles that came out with like a story start to finish. Like I could have seen this be the ending of that issue of his origin. So I guess in that sense, it worked a little bit, just again, in the sense that if it was never intended to debut an ongoing character, the standalone story of this guy who sells his soul, the person lives, he accidentally kills him, that sort of corrupts him, and then he dies anyway. Mm-hmm. So
I think it reminds me
of a, you know, Twilight Zone-esque sort of standalone story that could have been told. But obviously we wouldn't have an interesting character in that story.
Yeah, I agree.
Just and as
I
think we the did other... in this one.
Inherent problem with this issue, which we're also going to discuss on next week's issue with Spider-Woman, is that even though the what if question is what if Ghost Rider remained a villain, he's still not completely 100% villainous here, because although he's grabbing souls for Mephisto or the devil, he's still only doing it from people who he thinks are in the wrong, and he is ignoring like other people he doesn't have a fight with. So if he was truly a villain, you would think he would just be out there taking as many souls as possible. But there's still, even if it's not Johnny Storm, there's still some kind of
Johnny Blaze.
Well, Johnny Storm is also on fire, so that's why I'm confused. But yeah, even though it might not be Johnny Blaze, there's still this compass there.
So he does kill Roxanne, so I don't think I agree with you.
That's true, but
there's no reason for him to kill. I mean, I love that Roxanne is sort of being positioned as like the demon hunter here. I kind of was hoping she would have walked out of that hotel room with a shotgun, and like they really would have set her up as like a Elsa Bloodstone demon hunter type character, but they don't, other than she rides a motorcycle to confront him, and then he calls her a fool and says, "I didn't want to do this, mortal," and kills her. So I don't know.
That's
that
true. But later, earlier in the issue, he does say, I don't have a fight with you, mortal. So it is,
I think
maybe
he's becoming increasingly evil as the panels pass.
But I guess to have better lived up to the title, he's just like evil the whole time and has some kind of actual human quality deep, deep, deep within him that comes out at the end. But we don't quite get that.
So before we discuss if we're going to go back to this Earth, let's do our Uatu fashion report.
Mm-hmm.
So Uatu, who is only, other than a bodiless disembodied head, which opens the Ghost Rider story, we just have Uatu on the opening splash page in a costume no one's ever seen before.
I like this costume, though. It's very, you know, we'll put it up on our Instagram.
I'll
put it up on our Twitter. But it is a very striking costume. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, what's strange about it is it's not clear, like, where's the white robe? It's almost like he just has the white robe draped in front of him while he's wearing a blue spandex suit with an A in the center, or a shape that looks like it, and then has a blue cape that's sort of flowing behind him. So it's very unique and never to be seen again or seen before.
And he has a normal size head. It's a very Silver Surfer head.
It is a very normal size head until you get to Ghost Rider's story, and then it dominates the top of the page and looks a little more egghead-ish at that point. So Earth 7910, outside of Uatu's cool outfit, in terms of the Ghost Rider story, is this an Earth you want to go back to?
Well, I don't think so, but it's not really an Earth that we do get to learn all too much about. I mean, I guess it, yes. I mean, I guess, and we don't have Ghost Rider as a hero to help save people either. So I would.
Well, we don't have him as a villain either, so we just don't have Ghost Rider.
It's very neutral then.
I don't need to go back to this world. I don't need anything else from this world. Thank you.
Well, let's leave this world then. I've gassed up the bike. And let's jump all the way to 2019.
Will the future you describe be averted, averted, averted?
And today on our Then That issue, we're going to be discussing Ghost Rider number 1 from volume number 9. And Guido, how did you come up with this issue?
So it is the only issue we're going to read. This was a very hard list to come to, in part because this What If is very odd and doesn't offer much in the way of a retelling of anything. And I don't know Ghost Rider well. So I dug into, obviously, I only followed where Johnny Blaze is the character. So I avoided anything Danny Ketch or Robbie Reyes or any of the other Ghost Riders. I looked at times where maybe Johnny sort of lost control, and it doesn't seem to happen much that I could find. He's in conflict with demons. He's often in hell with the demons. So I really couldn't find too much that felt like it would have connected to this idea of like, what if the demon just sort of took over? And so I just decided, you know what? Let's read the most recent launch of an ongoing, which has Johnny as Ghost Rider. Granted, he's in hell, but it has Johnny as a Ghost Rider. And then so it's volume 9, and it's written by Ed Brisson, penciled by Aaron Cooter, who also did the inks, colored by Jason Keith, lettered by Joe Caramagna, and edited by Chris Robinson and Jordan D. White.
And yes, what do you think? This is the King of Hell part 1. I enjoyed it. I think I especially really liked the art, which is very fitting going back to how much we liked Mike Plew's art in Ghost Rider's very first appearance. I thought the art here was very striking as well, and similarly a really great use of color throughout. I thought that was really fantastic. Of course, it took me a little while to get into the story because I, like you, and in a rare occasion, you're probably almost on even footing with me as to how much you know about. Well, I did not know too much about what the lead up here was, which there's obviously a lot of backstory that you have to probably take into account to really appreciate this. But from what I did see on the page, I did like it. It definitely reminded me of the Netflix Marvel shows and that kind of tone, and also some of the DC shows that they've done as well.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I like Aaron Cooter's art. He did Guardians of the Galaxy and some of the recent stuff in the last few years in Marvel events. And I like that. I like Ed Brisson's writing often. And so I think as someone who was not connected to the characters or the ongoing story, it made me wonder if I'd continue to read more. I'm not a huge fan of Hell as a demon. Frankly, even when it comes to Limbo and X-Men comics, I'm not the biggest fan of it. But this was interesting, the way that, you know, Johnny can leave Hell and is Johnny Blaze and interacting with Danny Ketch, who I know very little about also, but perhaps corrupted. So though it was unintentional, this one actually could connect to our What If, in the sense that we're dealing with the possibility that Johnny is not in control, that he is corrupted and trying to take over Hell and perhaps move out of Hell and take over. I have no idea where this story has gone the last 2 years at all. So
no, and I, you know, it made me think too, I'm not a big Spawn person, but did Todd McFarlane basically take the look of Venom, the powers of Ghost Rider and Doctor Strange's cape and just put it together and create Spawn?
You'd have to ask someone who's ever read an issue of Spawn, which but he I'm has not like the Hellfire. People, so.
He's got the Change, which are also very Hellraiser as well. So, but maybe. I just kept thinking, oh wow, it's very Spawn. Only, you know, Spawn kind of looks like Venom.
Maybe. So do you think the What If inspired Ed Brisson in this relaunch of Ghost Rider?
I don't think Ed Brisson is aware that the What If exists. I don't think he's read it. No.
Yeah, I agree. I think even the idea of doing a corrupted Ghost Rider, I'm actually surprised that story hasn't been told more often. I really thought we'd have a big after reading list. I thought that it would be hard to whittle down the times that Ghost Rider has struggled with being evil, but I don't think it's a story often told, and Ed Brisson seems to be telling it with a good start here. So I am somewhat curious where this story goes, and I do not think that the What If inspired it.
I think you're right. Well, let us return to our new segment of Would You Rather. Each week, we will play a game of Would You Rather, placing ourselves in the Marvel Universe.
So this week, we're imagining being in the world of Ghost Rider. And I don't think there's a Would You Rather that, I mean, I guess we could wonder about the What If, and would you rather your adopted father stay alive, but you're evil, or die and you're not evil-ish? So like there's a one question.
Well, if yeah, that's a good question. But I still think I would rather have maybe the adopted father die, because ultimately if I'm evil, I'm going to be killing a lot more people. So I guess
you're just better... sort of it's like a trolley problem for you.
Yes, it is like a trolley problem. It's dying. Probably better that maybe that one guy dies than, you know, I have the power of Satan and I just kill hundreds of people. How about, what do you think?
I'd rather neither scenario play out in my life. And if someone's going to die, that's fine. I'd rather just let them die. So I'd almost rather just let nature take its course and not even make the deal with Satan and just sort of let someone die, but not have made a deal with Satan.
Yeah,
I guess if I can't choose that, I guess if that's cheating, then...
I mean, he makes the deal with Satan, like, because his stepfather's, you know, going to die before he rides a motorcycle at Madison Square Garden. It's less, like, that he wants to save his stepfather and more that he wants his stepfather to, I think, fulfill his dream, which...
I think that's what love between men is supposed to be like.
Well, his stepfather's also a little bit of a jerk to him too, so
well, the family dynamics we've already established, yes, are quite problematic that they set up there, so I'll go with I'd rather that whoever's supposed to die dies, and if I'm struggling with slight evil, that's better than being full-on evil. Do you have a would you rather, or does that serve our needs?
No, I think that's good. Well, we try to hunt down our souls from a never-ending torment somewhere in the great beyond. Thank you, dear watchers, for listening this week. The reading list is in the show notes, and I'm going to make one recommendation. Also, to listen to a song, the song Ghost Rider by the band Suicide, that to me is a much better version of Ghost Rider than what was in the actual What If this issue. And it is based on the character Ghost Rider, because the lyrics are Ghost Rider, Motorcycle Hero. So give that a listen. Maybe we'll share that on Twitter as well.
And you, follow us, dear watcher. You,
dear,
dear watcher. Oh, you. We have to do the narration. You, dear watcher, can follow us on Twitter. And you, dear watcher, you can shoot us an email at podcast@dearwatchers.com for you to make recommendations. And
be sure to leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We will be back soon with another trip through the multiverse.
And in the meantime, as Uatu says, keep pondering the possibilities.